Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and have you seen that viral video of the kid falling off a jungle gym? Or the other one where a girl is crying about going to Disney World? Have you heard of Gavin, the little boy who's been a meme since he's been even a little boy? We love watching clips of kids doing funny, often embarrassing things, right? They made that TV show, America's Funniest Home Videos, for previous generations. But for previous generations, there's no record of our childhood blunders online, and they definitely aren't available for people to watch worldwide on YouTube whenever they want. The new book, The End of Forgetting, Growing Up with Social Media, takes a look at children and teens' prevalence in media and what that means for young adults who can't escape from their childhood selves. And for some, of course, it's not just their cuteness or embarrassment that's forever preserved, but objectionable things that they've said or done, like the Parkland shooting survivor who just recently had his acceptance to Harvard rescinded. Did you hear this? Over racist comments he made in a Google Doc with his classmates. The author of the book, The End of Forgetting, is Kate Eichhorn. She teaches culture and media at the New School, and she joins us now. Professor, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So how much are you writing about the preservation of mistakes or misdeeds, some dreadful in words or consequences, like with that Parkland student? And how much just generally having even not particularly embarrassing childhood photos and comments preserved forever?
I think that I'm concerned with both of those things. And I think it's interesting that you brought up the survivor from Parkland, because in that case, no one wants to defend the comments he made in the shared Google Doc, but it was a semi-private document that, you know, and he did actually try to go back and erase those comments, but of course his classmates found those comments very easily. So it's a very good example of the blurred boundary between private and public, and also how even attempts to erase very quotidian dialogues are, it's increasingly difficult to do that. But I think that, so we're dealing with two things. One, the childhood celebrities on the one hand, people already have some kind of notoriety, and also just all of this quotidian, everyday documentation that you and I never had to deal with as adults because no one cared. It just disappeared.
So listeners, we have time for a few calls. If this is something that you're struggling with now that you've become an adult, with this online record of your childhood cuteness or awfulness or whatever it was, online forever? Or are you a parent watching your near adult children deal with this? Or are you a newer parent watching your own little kid growing up with social media today and wondering what it will mean when they try to forge adult identities? Do you think twice about posting those home videos? Call us 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 with your stories or questions for Kate Eichhorn from The New School, author of The End of Forgetting, Growing Up with Social Media. Does it make it harder to become an adult when your childhood self is so accessible?
I think that that's an open question, and we'll be watching, you know, how this unfolds over the coming few years. But what is clear is that in the past, one social identity development process had a lot to do with leaving home, separating yourself from the past, maybe making radically different decisions than your parents or the community you came from. And the ability to do that is compromised, I think, because you're not only moving forward into the future with all this documentation, but also the social networks that you had in elementary or middle school now follow you into college and beyond. And that's a radically different situation than the one, again, that people who grew up in the 70s or 80s experienced.
And so you refer in the book to the psychosocial moratorium, which is a psychologist Eric Erickson concept, right?
Yeah, which is, on the one hand, a somewhat problematic concept, because I think it's fair to say that not everyone has always had the privilege of having a moratorium on consequences when they were adolescents, and your, you know, previous conversations about race draw attention to that. But I also think that if there ever was a moratorium, that it's diminished greatly as a result of social media.
It even makes me think of the difference between Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, who had, you know, those racist high school yearbook photos preserved, but in hard copies, and he sort of got away without ever being publicly questioned about them until he was governor of Virginia. But look at Kyle Kashew from Parkland.
Yeah, and I've made the same comparison. I think it's a really compelling comparison. Again, not to defend Kyle and his actions, but you have two individuals, both engaged in racist behavior. One of them has already suffered consequences, and the other has not. I think that if Ralph Northam had grown up in our current era, that those photographs that have been called into question would carry a lot of data, and we'd be able to know whether or not he was in that photograph, when it took place, who was there. And that is what's changed. So digital photographs not only show us something, but they contain metadata that has other clues that we can use to verify these kinds of questions in the future.
Justice Kavanaugh, how much would have been recorded from that party?
Exactly. I think we would have been able to use cell phone data, and other people would have been there. There would have been photographs. I think that the entire discussion around Kavanaugh would have been profoundly different had they grown up in the 2000s and not in the 80s.
Caroline in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Caroline.
Hey there. So I captured a video of my son. He was about five. He was shirtless and he was breakdancing, and it was awesome. So I posted it on Facebook, and then we were walking down the street and we saw someone, you know, another mom, and she was like, "Oh, I saw you breakdancing. It was so cool. You did such a good job." And he's actually pretty shy, so he was horrified. And that was about 4 years ago. And ever since then, he really won't let me take his picture because he's so paranoid that it's going to go on Facebook. What I find interesting is developmentally, when kids, they probably used to be more worried about reputation than they are now at five because of Facebook.
What do you think?
I think that young people are not given enough credit that they are extremely aware of reputation management. Reputation management used to be something that only celebrities and politicians thought about. I think that if you talk to many middle school or high school students, they're already thinking about reputation management at a young age because they understand that they're not fully in control of where those images circulate. And as a parent, there's this interesting question, you know, in the future, will we see legal cases where adults actually take legal action against their parents for circulating images that they found inappropriate?
Humiliating. Oh, or inappropriate. Worse than embarrassing.
Yeah, worse than embarrassing, but inappropriate. And I think we probably will see some of those cases emerge in the coming years.
Mark in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Good. So my question is, I understand in Europe there are laws being passed where people have the right to remove their digital records and memories, and I'm wondering whether the author has any opinion on that.
Yeah, your book is called The End of Forgetting. There's a sort of right to be forgotten law in parts of Europe?
Yes, and in the UK and most parts of Western Europe, people generally support the idea that if there's something that isn't about a public figure, it's just about a regular person, the information is no longer relevant, they should be able to have that information de-indexed in a search. In the United States, this idea has not gained very much support for a variety of reasons. I think there's profound cultural differences between Europe and the United States that will probably mean we won't adopt a legal solution to deal with digital memory. I think it's more likely that eventually people who have the means, the resources, will be able to pay for some form of digital deletion. And so in the same way that we've capitalized or monetized memory, I think we're probably going to monetize forgetting.
Noah in Tenafly, you're on WNYC. Hello, Noah.
Hi there, how are you? So I am a young mother of two young children. My oldest is six, my youngest is three, and I am quite active on social media. I'm very active in my Facebook account and my Instagram account, and I seem to be the only parent that does not post any pictures or stories or even the names of my children online. strictly because I believe that they deserve privacy and that they should be able to create their own identity online when they are old enough to do so. And, you know, we are still not, we haven't seen the breadth of the consequences of, or the finality of the internet, really. I don't think it's been around long enough for us to fully understand what the ramifications can be, whether positive or negative. And yeah, I seem to be the odd one out that really just wants to allow them to have consent and more control in the identity that they create for themselves once they're old enough to do so.
That's so interesting. Noah, thank you very much. Professor Eichhorn, she's talking about informed consent, that she can't get it from her own little kids, and so she doesn't post photos and videos of them.
I personally think that that's a good idea. We have, my partner and I have two teens, and we don't post anything on social media unless we ask them first, and if their friends happen to be in the photograph, we actually get permission from their friends, and we very rarely would post pictures of the kids. So I actually think that's a really great practice, and perhaps she's not as alone as she thinks.
Hmm. You say in the book that the objectiveness of photos and videos will replace less accurate memories, what Freud called screen memories. So why would this be detrimental for people if they're more accurate?
I think that, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but there's been, you know, over a century of people theorizing the fact that part of your identity management, it's your social identity management, forgetting plays a role in that. So we tend to remember more positive than negative events in our life. You repress things that are unbearable. And there's a reason why that is the case. So with social media, with this sort of excessive documentation of our childhood and adolescence, our ability to decide what we should carry forward into the future and not diminishes and compromises that ability.
You even refer to people in the most extreme situations, like Holocaust survivors and refugees. How does forgetting affect them, for better or worse?
I think that as I was writing the book, it happened to be at a time when I was reading many articles every day about young migrants. And that experience, which is quite a traumatic experience, has been excessively documented on social media. And there's been many positive ways in which social media has been leveraged by young migrants traveling. But it also means that in another 20 or 30 years, the documentation of their journeys will be in circulation and may actually reappear at times when they're not expecting it or don't welcome the reappearance of those images or texts.
Is that balanced by what if somebody was able to get an Instagram post out of Auschwitz? You know what I mean? Revealing what was going on earlier.
That is a interesting speculation. Like, on the one hand, having access to more information is always positive. On the other hand, not being able to control when and how that information, especially about your personal life, circulates is not necessarily positive.
And so, as with so many things about the vast volume of information available online these days, there are wonderful and liberating things about it, and there are horrible and frightening things about it. This is both?
Yeah, and I think it's also really important to remember that the reason why young people finally have access to the technologies needed to document their lives and to circulate those images widely to a few hundred or a few million people is because private companies are invested in young people generating data.
Right, the profit motive.
Yes, it's about capitalism.
And we end on that thought of the tech giant's role in all of this, not just a natural occurrence. And we thank New School Culture and Media Professor Kate Eichhorn. Her new book is The End of Forgetting, Growing Up with Social Media. Thank you so much.
Thank you.